This is awful.
It's awful.
And yet somehow we get both Elvis and Justin Bieber.
Yeah, well, fake Elvis.
Fake Elvis. And boy, do I have questions for that guy.
Yeah, a lot. Like, do we have eyes on him? Like, what's the deal with that guy?
Hi, Jillian Benzavalli.
Hi, Patrick Hines.
Hey, fam. Couple things. Follow us on social media. It's at True Crime Obsessed Podcast on Instagram and on TikTok for as long as we still have TikTok. Too soon. Where am I gonna get my animal videos? Taylor's back on the road. Where am I gonna get my film? You know, I watch reels. I prefer reels to TikTok because I'm
you
a thousand
do?
I do
why
I think they're nicer and there are fewer ads.
All right, well,
so it's at True Crime Obsessed,
as they say in Queens. I'll see you over there.
Okay, great. Tell the listeners how good Aaron, our social media maker, is and how funny all the videos are.
They are amazing. They're edited, they're really quick pace, but they're edited in a really funny way. He's a superhero. I could never.
It's all the funny moments you hear in the episode. So once again, at True Crime Obsessed Podcast on Instagram and TikTok.
And he's using a lot of the clips from the episode or from the documentary too, so you get to see it.
Totally. Girl, this is going to be a long one, I think. What are we talking about today?
It's going to be a long one. So it's a special documentary on Hulu hosted by Diane Sawyer. I have my issues with her, but she's nice to the girls today.
What are your issues with Diane Sawyer?
I think there are some clips. Wait, it's the Turpin 13, okay. Escape from a House of Horror.
Great, but I want to know the tea between you and Diane Sawyer.
Nothing between me. What did she say about you? I didn't like how she talked to Whitney Houston. I didn't like how she talked to Britney.
Yeah. Okay.
She said some things where it's like, where are we doing this?
That's true.
But Jordan and Jennifer are here. They actually escaped from the House of Horror. So they are Jordan and Jennifer Turpin, and they are here telling their stories. And Diane Sawyer, very rightly, is very, very nice to them.
Yes.
They even do some jokes at the end. It's like a thing. They do impressions of Diane to her face. It's great.
You're right.
Like, normally, I'm kind of like, Diane, what happened?
Uh-huh.
But I don't know if it's her comeback. I don't know, but she's letting the women here tell their story, and I appreciate that.
An amazing escape to save a family by a terrified girl with towering courage.
This is 911. Do you have an emergency?
I just ran away from home because we have abusing parents.
My whole body was shaking.
Trying to save her 12 siblings from a house of horrors.
The only word I know to call it is hell.
Diane Sawyer, with a story of survival like you've never seen.
Every day did you wake up in terror?
For the first time anywhere, the raw police body cam footage inside the house in real time, and the secret recordings the children made on a camera hidden in a Barbie doll. Now, two sisters who risked their lives to save them all and move from terror to triumph.
It opens on January 14th, 2018, 5:49 a.m. We're in Paris, California. We see security cam footage of a house across the street from the house in question.
Yeah, so it's someone else's security footage.
Yeah, which is the easier way of saying it.
And we see someone in the dark.
Yes.
It's like right before daybreak or whatever, crawling out of a window. And you could tell she doesn't exactly know where to go. And then she just starts running.
She's clutching a cell phone. She's saying to us now, that was my only chance. At least if something happened to me, I knew that I died trying. What on earth?
So this is Jordan Turpin. She's 17 years old. We get the 911 call. And this is, I'm just going to tell you very briefly. This is an incredibly famous case. There's actually a lot of the body cam footage on TikTok.
Oh.
But she and her 12 siblings, she's one of 13, they're all literally chained up and locked in the house.
Yeah.
So she's never been outside before or been on the phone or interacted with another person.
That's a real thing. She doesn't really know how to dial the phone because she's never done it before. She's saying she can't make her thumbs work to even
but
do it.
But she's amazing because we get this 911 call and she's like, I ran away from home. I'm from a family of 15. She's counting the piece of shit parents in that.
We have abusing parents. Did you hear that?
Okay, how did they abuse you?
Okay, they hit us, they throw us across the room, they pull our hair, they yank out our hair. I have my two little sisters right now are chained up.
My two little sisters are chained up. And she it's so heartbreaking. She keeps asking the dispatcher if she can hear her.
Yeah, I know.
So she says things like, okay, did you hear that? So I
can you
my
hear
sisters,
me?
Did you hear that? Did you basically say like, am I doing this right?
Yes, yes.
Oh my God.
Yes, yes. And you could hear in her voice that she is mustering every ounce of courage she has.
She's out of breath because she thinks she's about to die because she thinks they're going to notice I'm gone.
Right.
And they're going to come get me.
And this is, it sounds fake, but it's really real. And the dispatcher says to her, like, how do your parents abuse you? And she says, they hit us. They throw us across the room. They pull our hair. They yank our hair. And then she says, my two little sisters right now are chained up.
Now, when
chained up.
And when you hear her, you can hear her heart beating out of her chest.
Yes.
She's out of breath. She's so full of adrenaline and terror. And then it's like 4 years later, she's sitting down to tell her story.
And 4 years later, she looks great. She, like, this woman, this, she's now a woman. She was a kid at the time of the 911 call, is smiling ear to ear. When you learn what she has been through, you can see her goodness coming out of her.
Yeah.
She just seems like a good person.
Yeah. And her sister Jennifer, too. It's crazy. So she says the cops are asking her. She's been transferred to like a second dispatcher, right?
Yeah.
Now we know now that they're keeping her on the phone. Help is on the way.
Yes.
But they're asking her a lot of questions to keep her on the phone.
And because the phone, they can tell, has been manipulated so that if the call drops, they can't call her back. The phone can only be used for outgoing calls.
And now Jordan is, you know, cops are on the way. They're 14 minutes away, which is an eternity.
Yes.
And she's roaming these streets that she says she doesn't even know about a sidewalk. She's just like in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
Jordan is scared that the first person she sees is going to be her parents dragging her back to that hell house.
In which they will kill her because they've told her that they will kill her. She believes it. She says to the dispatcher,
what's your address?
Okay, you got it. Give me a minute. This is going to take a while. I've never been out. I don't go out much, so I don't know anything about the streets or anything.
In her lifetime, she's been out of the house 5 or 6 times. She's 17.
And she, this will break your heart. So they're asking her address.
Yes.
And she has this envelope in her backpack that she, I guess, like stole on the way out. And she just reads a bunch of numbers. She's 9257. And Jordan is so nice. And she's trying to be so accommodating because the dispatcher goes, so that's not an address. You just gave me a bunch of numbers. And she goes, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I can do it.
Yep.
I can do it.
Yep.
And it's just like, if your heart isn't breaking into it, she's trying so hard. And the dispatcher is too, but it's like, I need this information. I need your address. Well,
my note here is that this dispatcher is so patient. And what I mean by patient
terrified.
Is she's calm, because I think that everyone instantly believes Jordan that, like, what are we going to find out when we get, but she's understanding in real time, the dispatcher, that she needs to figure out another way to communicate with this person, because this person literally does not know how to communicate with her.
Yeah. And she's like, so your address will be 3 numbers and then like a street name.
Yes.
So like, where is that on the piece of paper? So she's explaining on the phone, I'm doing this for my siblings. We are filthy. You know, they asked me for help, and she's just being so brave
and
so strong.
She's saying,
I'm so terrified because I know the way they were. They wouldn't care if they knew police were coming. They would just kill me right there and there if they realized that, especially if they knew I was on the phone with the police.
They will kill me knowing the police are coming. They don't care.
Right. And she's telling them, like, you know, she's like, the dispatcher's like, you're filthy. When was the last time you took a bath or showered?
Yeah.
And Jordan goes, almost a year ago.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking, how long was it really? You have no sense of time
right.
when you're in a house like that.
Yeah.
She's guessing.
And it's also like, when you see the house, there's running water. There's no reason they can't, like,
it's also a shithole.
Yes. Yeah. In the middle of a beautiful neighborhood, like, there's so much to get to. But Jordan is saying, we live in filth. Sometimes I wake up and I can't breathe because of how dirty the house is.
She says, my father has a gun. I don't really know that much about my mother. Like, my parents don't like us. They don't spend time with us. We're learning that because the dispatcher's asking, like, are you on medication? She doesn't know what the word medication is.
Right.
So they're like, pills. And she's like, I've taken Robitussin sometimes, I guess. But, like, she doesn't know certain words that you're like, she's 17. And she couldn't have done better on this phone call.
Yes.
She is being so brave and so strong, and she's saying everything right. And she did it.
Right. And it's also, like, even now when she's talking to Diane Sawyer 4 years later, her language skills have been stunted. She the way that she speaks sounds different from an average person who's lived an average life at her age. Like, her speech is off because she never learned how to talk.
Yeah. So they're like, okay, Jordan, who else is in the house? Now, she gives the names and ages of her siblings. Their names are redacted, yes, except for Jordan and Jennifer, who we will meet.
What is shocking is that there's a 22, a 25, and a 29-year-old among... There's 13 children. And they are 22, a 25, and a 29-year-old. So yeah, those are, like, adult children still living in this torture house.
She rattles off the names and ages. 2 years old, 11, 12, 14, 17, 18, 19, 20, 22, 23, maybe 25, and
yeah,
29.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And then the dispatcher asks her how she got the phone that she's calling on.
It was a phone that my brother had that he was going to throw away. And I had to have a way to contact somebody like you. So I got it so I could call 911. Hi. Okay.
Is that the deputy?
Yes.
Go talk to him, okay?
As she's saying that, the deputy pulls up.
And now we have the body cam footage, yeah, of the cop who essentially helps her be rescued.
Yeah, and it's wild because we've seen her now, 4 years later, yeah, and she looks like an adult. But now in the body cam footage, we see her then. Mm-hmm. She looks as filthy as she has described.
Yeah.
Her hair is ratty. She's doing the best she can, but like she's it's jarring. She's emaciated. Yeah. She's pale. It's terrifying.
And she knows this is it.
Yes.
It's now or never.
And
so
she's got to make these people believe her. If they don't believe her, if they just return her home, she's going
to
die.
So she says to Diane Sawyer, like, I was terrified. He was so serious.
The deputy. Yeah.
And she explains, look, my two little sisters are chained up because they stole mother's food. They will call these fucking wildebeests parading around, masquerading as fucking parents.
Yeah.
May these people burn in hell starting yesterday. I fucking hate them.
I know.
They call them mother and father.
Yes.
So the two little sisters are chained up because they stole mother's food. And now Jordan goes, and we see her do it. And I'm like, Jordan, you're doing so incredibly well.
Yeah.
She was upset. Sorry if I talk too much. I've never talked to anyone out here, so it's really, really hard for me.
So
she's feeling like she's not articulating, but she couldn't be doing better.
Yes.
Like, it's so shocking because she keeps apologizing and, I'm sorry, and, I don't know that word, and I don't know this. Like, she's so aware.
Yeah.
And she's just fucking killing it.
She is doing so, but we're all nervous for her because the deputy, who I understand, we're going to learn later, was the end of his shift. He took the runaway call because he thought, like, I'll just return the kid home and this will be an easy one. He's not right away necessarily understanding the gravity of what he's encountered. He asks her, the first question he asks her is, do you have any proof of this? And I just said, we got to do better than that.
He asked for photos and she's like,
and
yup.
She's got them.
And these truly horrifying photos of these kids and people, because some, yeah, of them are in their 20s. They're all people. You know what I mean? Children yeah, I and know. Adults.
Except for the parents. Not
like,
people.
No, they're not fucking people.
No.
They're like filthy. They're starving. They're chained up. They're bruised.
Yeah.
And Anthony Colacci is the deputy here.
Yes.
And he goes, don't get rid of those photos. You have to save them. Okay.
Right. And he also asks her, do your parents know that you left the house? And she says, no. And this is when he asks, do you take any medication? She doesn't know what that word. What's medication?
She doesn't know what the word injuries are.
Yes.
She also can't spell her name. And I'm like, can we kick in this door?
I know.
Saw the pictures. Can we just fucking drive that car through the front door of that house?
Because she just keeps saying, I'm out here because my sisters are chained to the bed and I'm terrified.
They stole mother's food and we haven't eaten in a week.
Yeah.
So then she's also showing him these videos of Jordan like singing the song that she wrote. And the
yes.
lyrics are, you blame me for everything. I don't understand. And
yes.
he's like, Jordan, it's a great video. You're a beautiful singer. Like, we're going to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah. And honestly, her sister Jennifer is also a great singer.
They're great.
We're going to find out in the end that Jennifer wants to be a Christian rocker. Good for her.
Let me tell you, I have
really?
Stories about Jennifer and Jordan. Yeah.
Oh my God.
So it's 7:23 a.m. Jordan escaped 90 minutes ago.
Yeah.
The cops pull up to the house and they ask Jordan.
So they was like, if we walk in, will they still be chained? And I was like, if they didn't notice me missing yet, yes. But if they notice me missing, they're going to try to cover that all up.
But if they noticed I'm gone, they probably will have unchained the siblings. But I can't be sure if they can tell.
Right. Because I feel like the cops need that to be able to, like, arrest the parents on the spot.
The minute they open the door. Like,
yeah. Wait, because, fam, you cannot imagine how bad it is in there. And we're gonna follow them in eventually. And
yeah.
it's real bad.
So the cops know that just based on how Jordan is communicating, what she's saying, her body language, they know this is going to be bad.
Yes.
So they're saying on the front porch, what are we saying, a welfare check? Yeah, yeah. Because the thing about this welfare check is you don't need a warrant.
Yes.
If they think that child is in danger,
they can just go in.
They can just go in.
And thank God. Here's a law we like.
So finally,
you know,
for once, they knock for over 2 minutes and 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And finally, The door cracks open and we see two of the saddest excuses for human beings I've ever seen in my fucking life.
And the thing that's so wild, because we're going to get the whole backstory here and leading up to this moment, all the decades that they've been torturing their children.
And we go in the house with the cops.
This is the moment they've been dreading for the last 2.5 decades.
And you can see their hearts beating out of their chest.
Yo, they have hearts, you think?
Whatever. Some empty fucking vessel. Darkness. The mother's a fucking mess. The father looks like he cuts his hair with a bowl over his head.
Yeah. On top of everything, you can hear the chirping fire. Like,
let me tell you, the entire time,
I know,
that chirping, I know. Must have gone on for months.
And honestly, like, that's one of those things that, like, just adds to the torture of what's going on inside
that
house.
In the videos that Jordan has sneakily taken in the weeks leading up to it, the chirp is in there. It makes me crazy.
I heard it I went, oh
my
God.
I'm glad you did, because I thought I was going to have to be the one to tell you. Chirp, we hear it 100 times. So she's breathing heavily, eyes are busting out of her head, the mother.
Yeah.
Their names are David and Louise Turpin. They're pieces of shit. It doesn't matter. But Jennifer is also here with Diane Sawyer. So yes. Jennifer is the oldest sister.
Jennifer's 33. Jordan is 21. Diane awkwardly says to Jennifer, how are you?
Diane.
I know.
At one point, she leans over and tries to hold hands.
Like, I know.
Leave them alone.
I know.
But it's amazing that they're telling their story, because they're talking about those first few minutes of, like, being free.
Yeah.
And Jennifer.
And don't worry, fam. We're going to get the whole story.
We're just jumping
to the end right now.
Jennifer says, like, there was, like, music on in my hospital room.
Yes.
And I just started dancing.
I know.
And Jordan's like, I was in a park and I was like, what is better than this? This is life. This is fresh air.
And she's like, I could smell the air. I could smell the grass. How could heaven be better than this?
This is it.
And I just wrote down, like, the resiliency of the human spirit.
I know.
What these two have survived and, like, have come out the other side, like, the fact that they're able to smile or laugh at all, but that's what they do most of the time.
Yeah, and tell the story together.
And just, like, I imagine, like, they're going to be amazing people. They're going to do amazing things. But imagine if they had had even a modicum of love and support from the people who brought them into
this world.
They're
going to be unstoppable anyway.
When you learn how smart, like, book smart Jordan is and how much she loved learning.
Yeah.
Imagine if she had been able to actually do any of that.
I know.
You know?
So they're protecting the identities of the rest of their siblings.
Yeah.
But we learned they all go to the hospital and they're all so small and malnourished.
Children so emaciated they had difficulty walking, stunted growth, heart damage from a lack of nutrients, a preteen whose arm was the size of a 4-month-old baby, their speech, their language limited by the isolation and neglect.
I really don't understand. You and I have been text screaming back and forth for days. Why did these people have children?
And the piece of shit mother had these 13 children.
Yes.
Like, they didn't adopt them.
No,
I'm saying
to
put your body through that 13 times to torture them.
Right.
For what? And we'll get into, like, even just the neglect.
Right.
And it's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
So let's talk about these assholes for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
The parents. I can't even call them parents. Parents are people who, like, raise and grow and love they're not parents.
No, they are the two people who, like, brought these children into the world.
God damn it.
I know. So the two parents, David and Louise, they met in West Virginia. They say David was a nerdy boy with a bowl cut haircut. He had a shy stutter. He graduated. This is the thing. This guy's really smart. He graduated from Virginia Tech and got a really well-paying job at Lockheed Martin. Like, this guy's an engineer.
What is that?
Lockheed Martin, it's my understanding that it's like a Boeing. It's like an engineering firm.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? It's like a big engineering company.
Now, Louise was 6 years younger, sang in the choir. She was sexually abused as a child, which, you know, I'm not taking that away from her. That is a fact.
Of course.
Louise, they got married when Louise was 16. He was 22.
16?
In this photo, she looks about 10.
Yeah.
Their wedding photo.
How did this happen?
It's disgusting.
It's disgusting.
They're members of the Pentecostal church.
Yes.
In 1990, they start their marriage in Fort Worth, Texas, and God has called upon them to have as many kids as they can. So they start having kids when she's 20 and he's 26.
And Jennifer's the firstborn.
Yeah, and she's here with us with Diane Sawyer. And she remembers, like, a little bit of her childhood.
She's just describing all the abuse she saw when she was a young kid. Like, she has a story about seeing her dad. She's on the stairs and she sees her dad yelling at the mom, punching a wall. The mom's crying. She's crying. She said she was terrified. These kids, even before all the shit went down, Jennifer's childhood sucked.
She was always walking on eggshells. And at one point, 2020 is like, well, you know, her mother had mood swings. No, that's abuse. Let's not, like, you know, sugarcoat it and call it mood swings. No. Like, she's been abused her entire life, Jennifer.
Correct.
So, you know, she grew up, the house was filthy. The shower is covered in black mold. Everything is dirty and brown. And they send little Jennifer to elementary school in dirty clothes. And I'm like, why wasn't this addressed on day one?
That's the thing, because, like, the school officials are all mandatory reporters. You know what I mean?
The minute she walked in the door, some adult should have said, wait a second.
Yes.
Because, am I crazy?
No, because she stank and she's describing how much she smells. She's saying,
I remember wanting to make friends. I remember a lot of them didn't want to be my friend. Didn't really understand why. I probably smelled, but I didn't realize at the time I smelled. But that stench clings to you. It stays with you because we would literally live in houses piled with trash. And I mean literally piled with trash.
It was like actual human waste on her. Like, they're living with human waste on the walls, yeah, on the carpet.
And she says, like, that it attaches, a smell like that attaches itself to you in a, yes, in a different kind of way. Like,
yeah, she's saying there are heaps and piles of trash all throughout the house. And I'm like, yeah, you can see it on a kid like that.
Of course. And 2020 tells us years later, there are no records from the school. We'll burn that down, too, while we're at it.
I know.
My God.
But also, and we'll get into this more. How about the neighbors while we're at it?
Right.
How about, like, all of the people that existed in the sphere of this family, especially when there's 13 kids by the end.
Right.
And no one says a goddamn word. It takes a 17-year-old sneaking out, taking her life into her own hands.
Yes. So by third grade, they take Jennifer out of school. And I'm like, let me get this. Okay, hold on a second. So they sent her to school to be bullied all day long.
Yes.
And then she lived in a house of abuse and not a single adult helped her.
Right.
Like, were there no parent-teacher conferences? Was there no, like, let me at least, like, helping kids be nice to Jennifer or picking up the phone and saying, what the fuck is going on in those four walls at home?
I mean, we will learn eventually that the parents do from time to time take the kids out for, like, a family photo op, and the kids are scared within an inch of their lives. Like, this is what you say. This is the grade that you say
it's
that you're in.
The only time they can take a shower and look clean.
Yes.
But Jennifer's going to school every day.
I just wonder if they're saying to her, you don't mention a word of this. You don't talk about this.
I don't care. It's undeniable. As a teacher, as a principal, as someone, as an adult of any kind in that school, as someone else's parent.
Yes.
So let's say your kid is the bully.
Yeah.
Somebody had to know that something is wrong.
It's just so funny, like, having, you know, Daisy's 10, and obviously I've known her whole life, and I've never seen a kid that I've been worried about, but I've never seen a kid that looks, like, dirty and filthy with bruises on them, and, you know, like, that the other kids won't play with or talk
something
to.
Something was
and
wrong.
And you would think, like, if you did see that, you would do something.
Something was wrong.
Yeah.
So, 1999, they moved to very, very rural Texas. The house is completely isolated, and this is where they start having kids. Kid after kid after kid.
Yeah, and so, like, we do see them at this time. They start posing for family photos, mm-hmm, and this is when the parents know, like, once a year, we got to put the kids in regular clothes and take them to Sears, mm-hmm, so we can get the family portrait done.
And so the kids, like, other than that, the kids aren't allowed outside the house.
No.
And they're taught to, quote, honor thy mother and father.
They literally use the Bible to explain their behavior toward us.
What parts of the Bible?
They love to point out things in Deuteronomy, saying that we have the right to do this to you, that they had the right to even kill us if we didn't listen.
The parents tell the kids, the Bible tells us we can beat you and even kill you if you disobey us.
If you don't listen.
Yes.
So they were, you know, pulling hair and being thrown across the room and pushed down the stairs.
The father's using belts and sticks.
Locked in dog cages.
I mean, no, the beating with the belts and the sticks and the being locked in the dog cages, just, it goes beyond abuse.
It's, and where in the Bible again?
I know.
Where exactly does it say that?
Oh, like, what?
Is it right next to the gay shit? Because it's not there.
Right.
I got news for you. It's not there. None of it's there. The gay shit is cool.
I know.
Wasn't Mary Magdalene a sex worker?
Yes.
There we go.
She was.
Jesus Christ. Literally, Jesus Christ.
I know. It's not even his fault. But Lockheed Martin, did he have any friends, this big fancy firm that he worked at? Like, did anybody notice this guy's a little off?
No, but you know why? Because he was probably, like, really good with computers, and they just let him do what he could do. Like, I think he just put his head down and did his job.
Yeah.
And he was good at it, and he got paid well, and no one, and he was like, oh, that weirdo with the fucking stupid hair, but he's good at his job. The end, you know, no one.
I guess my question is, like, I guess the torturing of the children is what you're doing for fun,
but
then?
Yeah, and are you lying? Is it like, oh, my wife's pregnant for the 11th, 12th, 13th time?
Right.
Like, are you just hiding it from people? Like, how, like, what is that? That's the other part of this abuse. You just you have to lie too.
Yes.
And do you want to live in squalor? You, the abuser, wants to live in squalor
with,
too?
With, like, human feces on the floor in the
Change
living room?
Change the motherfucking batteries in that, that fire alarm. Like, how could you, how? They are choosing to, you can't do that. They are choosing to live like that, too.
I know.
It's insane.
I know.
So Jennifer, as she's talking about it, needs to take a break, and she should take it.
The look on your face when I was trying to make the beep.
You can't do that.
I know.
You can't do that.
I know.
So Jennifer is taking a break. This is where Diane Sawyer, like, tries to hold her hand.
I know.
Like,
they're sitting very far apart. Diane really had to reach for that. Yeah,
Can you just let Jennifer have a break? She's earned it.
Yeah. Well, now we meet Wade Walswick. He was the lead investigator on the Turpin case. This man is broken. This case broke him.
And he said, he's like, I'm a 33-year veteran of abuse and homicide, and I knew this was unprecedented, and this is it.
And I just have my note here is also, Wade is not okay. Wade is crying. We see him throughout this documentary. He's crying. He can barely get through it. Like, the guy is, cannot, like, any normal person cannot see what these people have seen and be okay.
Yeah, walking through a house like that, seeing the children so malnourished, and then seeing
chained to a bed. When the cops eventually break in, some of the kids are so close to death, they can't even get up to go to the living room to see the cops.
They have, like, fleas on them.
Yes.
Like, the abuse is unprecedented.
Yes.
It is unbelievable.
So in 2006, the Turpins move the kids into a trailer, and then they take off to Vegas.
Okay.
They move to Las Vegas.
Kind of a weird place for these really strict Pentecostals where you can't drink, you can't have any fun, you can't do anything, but we're going to Vegas?
Yeah.
Then we learn they're out drinking at the rodeo?
Yes.
Don't you hide behind religion. You just are abusive.
Yes.
That's it.
Of
Put
course.
The fucking Bible down. Stop.
And, like, I guess I thought about this later, and maybe the justification is that some of their adult children are old enough to be considered adults, right? Because, like, they're in their 20s at this point.
Right, but they're not...
They're not capable of taking care of themselves or their younger siblings. But, like, legally, I wonder if the Turpin parents were like, oh, we can get away with this because there's, like...
Probably.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
I'm sure they were always looking for ways to...
But they're saying, like...
They drop off weekly groceries, never enough. Jordan was 6 when her parents left. She says at times she ate leaves, grass.
There was a lot of starving, so I have to figure out how to eat. Like, I would either eat ketchup or mustard... Or ice.
Ice cubes and ketchup?
Yeah.
She's eating ketchup, mustard, and ice.
Like,
those are the meals these kids are eating.
Like ketchup packets from fast food and ice cubes.
Yeah. And then Jennifer, when the parents are around, Jennifer's saying that, oh, no, our parents would eat, like, frozen pizzas and fast food that I would have to prepare for them, but then I wasn't allowed to have any of it.
Right. So before all that, though, Jennifer is the oldest. So they would go out in Vegas, like, super weird place for religious Pentecostals, but okay. Don't drink.
Yeah.
Don't smoke.
No.
Know this, know that.
Yeah. I mean, clear. And we know that they are doing that. Like, they've thrown the Bible away
like,
at this point.
Good. You don't deserve it.
No.
Honestly, like, I'm not, whatever. So, but they would force Jennifer, the oldest, to, like, abuse her siblings by, like, locking
them
in cages when they're not there, because she would suffer if she didn't. She never knew when they'd be coming back, so she was living in this constant state of fear and guilt. She didn't want to do it, and I'm sure she was being as nice as she could, but if they came home and they weren't in the cages, Jennifer would have to pay for it.
I just, like, because eventually Jordan sneaks out of the house with the parents home. I'm just thinking, if the parents are gone for weeks at a time, why isn't one of them walking to the, I mean, maybe because they were in the middle of nowhere and they didn't have
they didn't know how to get to a police station. I think that's what it was, because the house was already very secluded, and then the trailer behind the house, I'm thinking this is sprawling piece
miles
of land,
and miles and miles away,
and they're too weak and they don't know, and it's like, you can't just, like, run outside
and
knock on a neighbor's door. It's like, they can come home at any minute.
You're too scared that the police won't believe you. It's like, when Jordan was taking her life into her own hands when she snuck out that window. If those people didn't believe her and they had brought her back, she'd be dead. That's what happened with that kid with Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yep.
His final victim.
That's
what I was thinking this whole time. He escapes Jeffrey
Dahmer. The cops brought him back to Jeffrey Dahmer.
Brought him back to his killer.
My God.
Yeah.
So in 2015, and also, I don't think the kids knew, oh, we're in Vegas for a week or 2 weeks. It's like, we're coming right back, so you better be on edge.
Yeah. I guess
that's
true.
Part of the psychological torture.
Yeah, yeah.
So 2015, we're in Vegas. The stupid idiots are renewing their vows.
Okay, so this is very out of left field for me. Suddenly, all the kids are there. It's a wedding. It's a vow renewal thing with an Elvis impersonator.
I'm thinking the youngest one is maybe six.
Yeah, please tell me we're going to squeeze every second of levity out of this moment.
I was going to say, does he know?
I know.
Because he's on video. He's performing.
You ain't nothing but a house. Say, hound dog.
Honka, honka. Burning love. Baby, baby.
Baby, baby.
Mama, mama.
Mama, mama.
And we put our hands together, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
I know.
And I'm like, does he know?
It's like, because if you look at the kids.
Because you never forget the family of 15 who came in that one time.
No, well, that's true. Here's what I'm thinking, and I'm not judging anybody with this. I'm thinking if you're an Elvis impersonator in Vegas, your nights are pretty wild, and like you come into work the next day, and you're maybe a little hungover.
I think it's pretty monotonous. Another day, another wedding, another annulment, another.
But I'm just thinking, like, maybe he was too hungover to look at the 13 emaciated humans that are so pale. You see them trying to dance and they can barely hold their heads up.
I know.
So like they're in public. There's people who should be seeing how fucking creepy this is.
I know.
They're all wearing the exact same outfit.
Yeah.
And then like the parents are like, they're so into, like,
we have to watch them kiss.
Oh, I was just thinking that too. And they really,
that like really harsh closed mouth, like, like frog, like weird.
No. Ugh. And they're really going for it with that kiss.
And it's like, God. Like,
which is wild because these two evil parents seem to really like each other.
Well, who else is going to have them?
I know.
Like, I hate to say it, but soulmates, if I've ever seen them.
100%.
They deserve it. They're the only people. Anyone else would be like, you're not torturing our children. But they happen to find, like... like, ma'am.
You know what? Today's the day we stop torturing,
like,
our children.
Let her have some of the Big Mac, you monster. Like, anyone else. But it's like these two. We say this all the time. How did they find each other?
I know.
But the ceremony, right? The kids are all there. They're all dressed in these identical plaid outfits. They're smiling. Yeah. They're dancing. And this is a moment I want to slow down on.
Yeah.
Because Diane Sawyer hands them photos of their big day out. Because they got the professional photos of, like, the whole family with Elvis in the middle, whatever.
Yeah.
And Jordan, who escaped, kind of smiles. And she looks over at Jennifer, who instantly has tears in her eyes.
Yeah.
Jordan is immediately dialed into her sister. And it's a moment that really, really struck me because Diane Sawyer hands her and she's kind of like, oh, remember? And she looks to sort of reminisce with Jennifer, and Jennifer's not having it. And if you go back and watch Jordan's face, she goes, she's immediately like, what do you need? What's going on?
Uh-huh.
And then the two of them, it's like no one else is there. And I really, it really, really struck me about how they look out for each other, because no one else in the world can ever understand it.
I was going to say, like, they're the two of 13 who have the only shared experience they'll ever know.
Like, and the way she just, like, Jordan, everything stopped. Like, it's a split second moment, but it really, really struck me. It was really
important.
Yeah,
and you can just see how close they are.
Yeah.
In general. Like, you know, it's been 4 years since they escaped, and it's clear that they decided that they were going to be the ones that were going to come forward and tell the family story, you know?
Yeah.
And they are, I mean, obviously they're such strong women, but like reliving this must be a horror for them every day.
Yeah, because Jennifer says, like, yes, you know, looking at this photo, she's describing how it makes her feel, and she says, yeah, we were really happy to be outside and be clean.
Doing anything,
and
she said.
And be doing anything. And she goes, but it's not real.
She would get us all dressed. We would get clean. And then we would go out and it would be like the best day ever. We were so happy, all of us. But then when we would come back, it was just like put on the same dirty clothes and sit back to where. And I used to always wonder, like, why couldn't we just be a family like that all the time?
Why couldn't we actually have been this family?
Yes, yes, right.
It could have been so easy. We could have done it. We did it a few times a year. Like, it was in us to be that.
And as we keep saying, how is the torture easier? How is the torturing of 13 kids easier than loving them?
Right, and living in a shithole and not changing the batteries in the fire alarm and not
and
taking care of
yourselves.
And having
the human feces all over the living room. Like, how is that easier?
That's because I have to stop trying to understand it.
Right, yeah.
Because you can't.
And why do you keep having the children. You know what I mean?
To add, it's a control thing. Uh-huh. It's a power thing. It's an abusive thing. I mean, I think they force them, the parents I'm talking about, force themselves into the spiral of insanity and evil.
Right.
It's like,
because how do they justify to themselves when they're chaining the kids who can barely move anyway to their beds?
And their big offense is like, I'm hungry.
Yeah. What are they saying to themselves to make that make sense?
I think they've lost all sense and grasp of reality long ago.
Uh-huh.
That's
like,
what I think.
Are they saying we're keeping them safe from the, we're keeping them inside to keep them safe?
I think that might be part of, maybe. I mean, we'll never know, but they definitely didn't want them to leave. They lied to them and threatened them about leaving.
Like, these kids, like, Jennifer was 25 years old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Still living in the, like, Jennifer doesn't even know she can leave.
Yeah.
That she's an adult and she can walk out at any time.
They're just evil.
Yeah.
So, 2010, they moved to a California suburb. This is the house that Jordan ran away from.
Paris.
A suburb of Spanish-style homes, flowers by the door. David Turpin has a new job as an engineer at Northrop Grumman. He also has a new Mustang. On another car, a vanity plate. David and Louise forever.
Can I just say, it really strikes you when you watch this documentary, like, it's a beautiful suburb. Like, the house on the outside is beautiful. The other houses in the neighborhood are beautiful. This is a neighborhood where the houses are on top of each other.
But there's, like, a shared fence. So I'm thinking, this house, 13 kids, this should be the bane of your existence. This should be the loudest, most annoying house on the block.
Yep.
And it's not. And that's a red flag.
Yes.
I'm saying that because 13 kids... 13 birthday parties a year.
Yes.
13 graduation. 13. There are so many things
at
to do.
At least two bad apples that are having parties when the parents are
you
out of town.
You know, they have pets.
Yes.
They have animals in that house. Like,
yes.
They're, like, you're only... Okay, so there are 15 people in the house, and yet you're only seeing the parents.
Right.
And it's quiet, and not a kid is making a peep, and nobody says
and
a word.
I guess, in fairness to the neighbors, maybe they never saw the 13 kids. Like, maybe they never knew there was 13 people in that house. But, like, can... Just as a society, can we open our eyes? Can we walk around and take a little bit better care of each other? Can we just pay a little bit more attention to our surroundings and make sure that, like, people are okay? Because there was 13 kids being tortured next door and nobody noticed.
And that's, maybe they didn't see them, but there was a move-in day.
Yes.
They moved them all in.
Yep.
How?
And maybe it was the middle of the night. Right.
Maybe it was the middle of the night. Maybe it was.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or maybe they moved them in slow. Like, who knows?
We don't talk to a neighbor. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm the neighbor, I'm not talking. You know what
Probably
I mean?
Probably not, you know?
So
the house, by the way, is a mess.
Yeah. This is where we learn that Louise, the mom, is a hoarder. But she's a hoarder for children's shit. So it's children's clothes, children's toys, children's games. All the shit that her kids would actually love to play with.
Super expensive clothes with the tag still on them.
Yes.
The kids can't wear it.
No.
The toys that are unopened, the plastic wrap is still on it.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to play with them.
The children are not allowed to touch mother's toys unless she gives permission. This is a video made in the house of one of the children's closets. Brand new clothes with price tags on them, while the children remain dressed in filth.
Thousands. They are in thousands upon thousands of dollars of credit card debt.
Right.
Limited edition games, limited edition Barbie. But the tags, they're not open.
Right.
And they're piled up and they're piled on top of garbage bags and the place smells.
And it really does tell you something about the mental health of the parents. Like, they are not well.
They're not.
That is very, very clear. David, the dad, now files for bankruptcy. And they say the kids are now forced to live with even less. Now the kids are down to eating bread and peanut butter. Sometimes they don't even get three meals a day.
But what they're doing, though, I just want to go back to the toys for a second. What they're doing is tempting the kids as a way to punish them.
Uh-huh.
Because at one point, Jordan and Jennifer say, you can't touch mother's toys unless you have permission.
Right.
So she's going to, like, dangle a toy in front of a 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old.
Yes.
And then be like,
who's
you can't touch
that. Who's been
chained
to a bed for 3 weeks.
Yes. You can't have that.
Yeah.
They probably don't even know what it is, but it's a cool spark. It's something new.
It's,
I don't know.
It's anything
interested.
To break the monotony. It's anything. It's like, well, I've been dealing with the fleas in my hair for the last 8 weeks,
but,
and now there's a toy for me
right,
to play with.
But it's another way to say nope.
Yeah.
Like, it's another thing they can't have. Like, they know that they're being deprived.
Yeah.
They understand it, but it's another thing to, like, take away from them.
I mean, and this is also where we get a bit about the family schedule. And Jennifer and Jordan are saying that, like, they were forced to stay awake all night and then sleep during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And all the blinds were closed, the windows were closed. When the cops eventually break in, they're like, it was 700 fucking degrees in there.
And which makes it smell even more.
Yes. But they keep the kids awake when the neighbors are asleep. And they keep the kids asleep when the neighbors are awake. So the neighbors are never hearing anything or seeing anything.
Right.
They're just seeing the parents come and go.
And we see footage of, like, I think they have more than one refrigerator and freezer.
Yes.
It is packed.
Yes.
It is filled with food. And Jennifer's like, yeah, I would have to prepare the food and then I couldn't eat any of it.
They would have to give it to the parents. Like, I don't... It seems like the torture was the fun part for
them. Of course it was.
I really don't understand it.
I know. So the Turpins started a homeschool.
Sandcastle Day School.
These are documents filed by David Turpin, who proclaims himself principal. Louise is the teacher.
In this case, the Turpin family claimed that they were homeschooling their kids. They weren't. They used the homeschooling system as a way to avoid any scrutiny.
We see the paperwork. It was like registered as a homeschool. They weren't just saying, oh, it's a homeschool like other cults do or whatever.
Right,
I'm serious, but this was like on paper. So I'm like, why isn't that every single registered homeschool has mandatory periodic home visits?
Yep. And I wonder.
What is that?
I think it's more that like it's not. I don't know. I don't know anything about homeschooling either, but I don't think you have to. It's more about the teaching than it is about the actual structure of the school, like the house as a school. Like the kids have to take standardized testing. They have to pass on to the next grade or whatever.
But someone should also be checking on their well-being.
Oh, 100%.
To me, goes hand in hand. So if you are registering, I mean, what is it, Sandcastle
School? Sandcastle Day School.
Whatever. I think every...
Where's the merch for that?
Whatever. Every 6 weeks or whatever, someone should just be like, hi, everything cool? Amazing.
Yes.
It could be 5 minutes.
Right, because part of the point of sending kids to school is to make sure that they're being taken care, that they're well taken care of.
So let's get eyes on them.
Yeah.
Because now it just seems like a very easy way to keep them out of the public eye, which is exactly what they did.
Because that just means that like any abuser can open a homeschool and keep their kids home. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, we got to do better. I mean, like the state of
I want periodic check-ins on every single homeschool, and I don't think that's too much to ask.
Jillian's law.
I'm not saying every week, but periodic, regularly surprise visits.
Yeah,
is what
I had a home daycare, and we would have surprise visits.
Yeah, and if everything's great, what's the problem?
Exactly.
If everything is great, a 5 minute. I just want to look around 10, 15 minutes, just to make sure everything is fine. Look the kid in the eye and say, "Are you okay?"
I'm sure it's the bureaucracy of it all. I'm sure there's not enough people who want to do those jobs. There's not enough people to, you know what I mean? Like,
oh,
it's, I know. And, but like,
these kids are so vulnerable.
I know.
Can
this
we help them?
This is the result. Exactly.
But the kids start getting creative now, and they're trying to film what was going on.
Yes. Because some of the older siblings are allowed to have smartphones, which is surprising to me.
And I wonder if maybe some of them were going to work or something.
Well, it's also a way that the parents can be gone for extended periods of time and like have a way of communicating with the kids,
right.
I guess.
So there's like one Barbie doll that someone is allowed to have.
That has a camera.
But the stupid mother didn't realize that there's a camera in it. And a few of the older kids are allowed smartphones. And I guess they also, say stupid, didn't realize. They're so out of touch, they didn't realize that like every phone, even the oldest flip phone has a camera on it now.
Exactly.
Right now, I don't care if you get the oldest phone that you can possibly purchase right now has a camera on it.
Right, yes.
Like, that's where we live now.
Yeah, and they're like, the kids are taking videos of the food they're hiding in their beds. They're trying to, and then this is where we're learning that, like, they are, quote, homeschooled, but they have been given no education.
These children are so desperate for an education, they try to teach each other language and what it is to be human.
I knew the whole alphabet, but I had my sisters help me with that. They taught me the I, E, I, O, U.
The vowels.
Yeah, the vowels.
These kids are desperate to learn. They're really smart kids. They want to learn.
So were the parents lying on the standardized test that the state was then checking?
No.
How were they getting away with this?
I think that nobody was just checking. I think that I don't think the kids ever took the tests. I don't think that any, I just think that it just got
They
lost.
Didn't have to submit everything, anything. And too bad we haven't heard from this family.
No, because
God knows.
You only do that if you actually want your kids to advance and get a high school degree. Like if you don't actually want that and you're not submitting anything, like nobody really cares.
That is.
I know.
That like is taking a minute to sink in.
Yeah.
Nobody really cares. These kids are just like
lost to the system. Yeah.
That is insane.
Think about how easy that would be to do. You know what I mean? Like you just never register your kids. They're not outside. So the neighbors aren't reporting that they're like, these kids are playing in the front yard when they should be at school
then
or whatever.
Why even do the fake homeschool then?
Exactly. Because maybe in the beginning they did want it. Maybe for Jennifer, they did try to attempt it or whatever.
Maybe like in case someone saw a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
In case like, you know, someone looks through the window and sees the kid, like it's
just
covering their
all
ass.
All around, nobody's trying very hard. The parents aren't trying very hard to hide anything and the authorities aren't doing anything to help these kids.
The only people trying hard are the fucking kids.
Exactly.
The kids being held captive and abused on a daily basis.
Yes.
So, but the parents would tell them, like, don't talk to strangers. If you're out, when we're out,
yes,
on our big day out once a year or whatever, do not talk to strangers. Do not say anything. If you do, CPS will come and take you and separate you.
I thought that we would all go in different countries And I thought that we would never see each other again. And I thought that we would be put into cages and they would starve us. And then as soon as we turn 18, just throw us out on the street.
Jordan believed this, that we're all going to go to different countries. We'd all be put in cages. They would starve us. And when we turned 18, they would just throw us out on the street. Now, actually, most of this ends up happening to Jordan anyway.
I know.
When she is, quote, rescued by CPS or whatever. But, like, that was the fear. They wanted to stay together. And the older kids want to be able to make sure the younger kids are safe, which is why they don't do anything.
And they would also tell them, the parents would tell them lies to tell. Okay.
Yes.
Because they all looked so much younger because they were malnourished.
Right.
So it'd be like, you tell them you're in third grade. The parents had, like, and again, just to keep track of that.
Once
just
again,
love your kids.
Love your kids and put them in school.
It's so much easier.
I know.
Like,
hey, but guess what? It's 2015 and Jordan discovers Justin Bieber.
And this is actually really, really, really important.
This is really good. She discovers Justin Bieber in High School Musical and
Let
everything
changes.
Let
me tell changed. You, and the Disney Channel. So she's like, they have these secret phones.
Meanwhile,
right?
These kids are all being tortured on the set. We'll get to that
I
on
mean,
the Patreon
oh my God.
In just a minute.
Disney Channel, you're next, I'm sure.
I know.
So she's watching. You know, they have these, like, you know, what do they call it? Like
iPhones?
No, like in prison when you're not supposed to have. They have
contraband.
These, like, counterfeit contraband phones. And God knows how they have it. They just have them. Some of the older kids can have them. So she's watching. Jordan is, like, scrolling, like so many of us do. And she starts to see not just Justin Bieber's music videos, but, like, his own social media.
His, like, Instagram.
And photos and videos that he's posting. And she's like,
I started realizing that there is a different world out there. I only knew one world, and that was, like, always being there. I was just blown-minded by how different it is out there, and I was always like, I want to be out there. I want to be like that. I want to experience that. I want to do that.
This was her only glimpse into the outside world ever.
Right.
Like, and I'm like, her parents aren't even watching TV. Like, they're not, there's nothing.
Like, what do they do all day? Like, what are they doing in that house all day?
They just, like, sit like fucking ogres and, like, fart and burp.
I know.
I love you. I love you, too. Like, ugh. Oh, that bowl cut's so sexy. Like, cool.
Get over here and kiss me to Elvis.
Like, ew.
I know.
So this is when Jordan's like, I started realizing that there was a different world out there. Like, houses could be clean. People have friends. You can have fun. And, like, Justin Bieber opens up about, like, being sad and finding comfort in God. And Jordan's like, wait. Oh, so God is, like, nice and isn't about punishment. And, like, it helped her with her vocabulary. She finds High School Musical and Hannah Montana.
I know.
And she's like, wait, like, Hannah Montana can, like, speak to her mother? Like,
did Brooke Shields play Hannah Montana's mom?
We saw the clip.
And so Brooke Shields played Hannah Montana's mom. I feel like that got lost in the shuffle for me. I did not know that.
Yeah, Dolly Parton's actually Miley Cyrus's godmother.
That
and I think
I did
she
know.
Was also on Hannah Montana, I believe.
Really?
Correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't know.
I don't know much about Hannah
Dolly
Montana.
Dolly must be protected at all costs.
Like, please.
And also, while we're here, wouldn't have killed... I kept waiting for Diane Sawyer to be like, and Justin Bieber! And he would, like, pop out of a closet.
No.
Would it be too much to ask for the Biebs to come over and, like, say hello to the girl who's, like, live? She saved her siblings because she liked his music videos.
Because he inspired her.
Yeah. He couldn't come say hi?
I guess not. So Jordan is so inspired by... the fact that she's like, you know, she knows it's like a shiny, you know, the Disney Channel and Justin Bieber and it's rich and shiny, but she's like, there is another world out there for me. So she starts posting online herself, secretly.
Which, my mind is blown by this. I guess, like, her parents are so stupid, they don't understand how social media works. So
no, they don't.
She can create an account. We don't know what platform she did this on. They don't tell us. But she writes a song and puts it up on a social media platform and starts, like, attracting fans.
You can hear the chirping in this thing.
Can I do it?
No. What is wrong with you? Just change the battery.
I know.
Like, I know. Like, oh, this really is a certain level of hell that they've created also for themselves. That's why I'm like, I have to disconnect from it because I'm never going to understand it. Like, from top to bottom, there's nothing about this I understand.
It doesn't make any sense. But what happens here is that she, like, attracts, like, a couple of fans and some guy reaches out to her.
A stranger writes asking why she's always inside and up at night.
He kind of just realized that I was always in my room, and then he started asking questions, and I told him how we eat and how we're not allowed to get out of bed. He was like, this isn't right. You should call the cops.
You say that you're, like, a teenager, but you're living this, like, literally and figuratively, like, dark and sad life. So, like, what's going on? And she starts talking to this guy and she explains what her life is like. And he's like, girl, no, this is abuse. Like, you need to get out.
Okay.
Like, you need to call the police. Like, this is really, really bad. I'm here to tell you, like, that's not what your life should be.
And so, like, Jordan is just like, oh my God, like, this is, like, in addition to, like, seeing Justin Bieber's amazing life.
Right.
Once again, 5 minutes of your time, J-Biebs.
I know.
You know what I mean? Make a Zoom call.
You know.
And she's says, like, I knew this guy was right. And this is, like, a big moment for Jordan where she's like, something's got to change.
Now, it's 2018, and Jordan has had it, and everyone has had it. And now they're talking. They're, like, asking the older kids for help.
Yes. Because just to put a fine point on that, the two young kids who are chained to the bed are saying to their sisters, we are living in filth. We have fleas all over us. We are living in our own feces. We can't go to the bathroom. We've been in this bed for, literally, they tell us they were in those beds for months. They're like, you have to do something. You have to.
Now, years before this is 2018, but years before this, Jennifer had tried to escape, and she got out of the house, and because they had brainwashed them that if you go an inch out of the house, like, everyone's coming to kill you.
Yeah.
Jennifer realized, like, I don't even know where to go.
Right.
I don't even know what to do, and turned around and went back. And I completely understand why she did that.
Of course. Of course.
Now, Jennifer, today in front of Diane Sawyer, is singing yet another heartbreaking song about, like, trying to find light in the darkness. Like, these women are just like.
She has a beautiful voice.
They both do.
Can Justin Bieber let her sing backup on one song?
I'm so mad at Justin Bieber.
Why can't he be here?
I don't understand.
I kept waiting for the reveal. I kept waiting for, like, the end of Justin Bieber.
Nope.
And, like, even after seeing this document, she's not going to make a phone call?
I guess not. So Jordan is ready to leave, and Jennifer is giving her all the advice she can. Everything she remembers from, like, the year before, drawing a little map.
But,
like,
she's drawing a little crude map of what she can remember of the outside of their house.
For, like, she was there. And, again, she was traumatized. It's just she's doing her best.
Well, my point is that they don't even know what the outside of their own house looks
like.
You know?
So then they start calling cab companies.
In a dark room, Jordan films a phone call with another sister, who asks a taxi company how much it would cost to take someone out of California to Nevada.
The very beginning of Nevada.
Yeah. How much would it cost?
A couple hundred?
I'm not going. I'll take a bus.
That fucking chirp is still there. They're filming themselves making these phone calls.
Yeah.
And it's a good question. It's like, well, why don't we just take a cab? Like I saw on that Disney Channel show. I'm just saying. Like,
and it's funny because, like, these are the things
they just learned about a cab on the Disney Channel. And they're like, well, why don't we do
that? Exactly. Because these are the things that we would do when we were in middle school.
And it's a totally valid thing. Yes. Like Hannah Montana took a cab that one time. Again, I'm not making a joke.
Yes.
I'm saying they're taking what they've learned for the first time ever.
And they're like, they don't want to get caught. When they see that it's too much money, they're like, just tell them we'll take a bus. Get off the phone.
Because they're so paranoid because their parents brainwashed them to think that.
But one of the other shows that Jordan remembers seeing is Cops. And she's like, oh my God, on Cops, they always have proof on their camera phones.
Well, here's the thing.
Cops did one good thing.
Like one good
thing. Jordan to get the receipts.
Oh my God.
I know.
So January 14th, 2018, Jordan... I just want to slow down on this. Jordan asks permission before taking photos of her siblings. Mm-hmm. Number one, that's incredible. But number two, she knows she needs proof so that they don't say she's just a teenager looking for attention. And, you know, it really hit me.
Yeah.
That even girls who are trapped inside their entire lives still know that society won't believe them right away.
Yeah.
She still knows that she needs real proof. And I'm saying, like, I know you can't just, like, kick down someone's door. I understand that.
Yeah.
But, like, the proof is there.
Uh-huh.
And instead of just, like, asking a question or saying, like, hey, like, let's just open the door. Oh, yeah, of course. Like, we'll walk you home and see what happens. She knows they're not going to believe me.
Yes.
I need to take photos.
She also is thinking, like, I've got one shot. Because if they return me Jeffrey Dahmer style, my parents are going to kill me.
But
I'm with you. I'm with you 100%.
And also, the parents have said, if you escape, you will be sent away. Like, I know that she is been so traumatized. I totally understand that.
Yeah.
But I'm also thinking and hoping, I've been burned before,
yeah.
that if that cop was like, oh, okay,
yeah.
Jordan, is it? Well, I'll just walk you home. The minute they opened the door, they'd be like, oh, shit.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Like, I would hope
that
the situation was so bad. But I don't know. They returned a kid to Jeffrey Dahmer, so who am I?
But,
honestly,
I know. Like, it's not one set answer. It's like, maybe the parents would have walked out and met her in the driveway, and the cop would have been like, good night, little girl. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Thank God that's not how it
happened. Thank God that's not what happened.
So it's now or never, too, because the next day they're supposed to move to Oklahoma, apparently.
And can I say we're back with Wade, the lead investigator, who I wrote, and I mean it, I hope there was a mental health professional on set for him during his interview, because he was sobbing.
Yeah.
He says, like you're saying, the next day they were moving to Oklahoma, he said,
I honestly don't know that at least one, maybe two of them would have survived the trip. They were in such horrible decline. And on the edge of starvation.
One or two of them were so malnourished, they would not have survived the trip in the car.
No way. So Jordan puts blankets in her bed in case her parents check in on them.
Like she's escaping from fucking Alcatraz.
But also she said, too, like, they don't really care.
Yeah.
Like, they won't check on them. The whole thing is that they hate these kids.
Yeah.
So she also changes her clothes, so she says her words that she doesn't smell as bad. And now we're back at the beginning.
Well, she hops out the window, and then, like, a minute later, another kid hops out the window, which we didn't see in the beginning. And then, like Jennifer had the first time, hops back
Jennifer's
in.
Jennifer's probably like, get inside.
I know.
We have a plan.
Yes.
Like, don't do this.
Yes.
Like, we're on it. Don't rock the boat here.
So this is where we hear the 911 call from the beginning. We see the deputy arrive. The cops arrive at the Turpin house at 7:10. They knock on the door. We're now going into the house.
And these ghouls are terrified, and rightly so.
I mean, the parents on the front porch, like, the mom cannot, but she keeps being like, a girl, you said, says that she's being tortured. Did she give a name? Do we know what the name of the girl is?
And they're like, sorry, wildebeest, not really. We they're like, I don't know who called. Sam, do you know? We don't know. We just have no idea. So, and also, this fucking wildebeest coughs at a cop.
I know.
Open mouthed. Even before COVID, that was rude.
Do we hate wildebeests?
I'm sorry, wildebeests. It's not how I mean it.
Do you know
what I mean?
Yeah.
I need a word that's harsher than dingbat.
Yep.
And bozo.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't hurt any animal's feelings.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even like pine cones are pretty in winter decor.
Right. Don't.
I'm stuck. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
because
they're
so
cilantro.
Vile. See, now 50% of the people are going to agree and 50 aren't.
We can do this. We can do this.
What about like a ghost pepper?
Pistachio ice cream.
No, that can be good. We need something that's like, like undeniably offensive, but we don't feel gross saying it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay. How about plastic in the ocean?
Yeah. Pollution.
Pollution.
Did we do it? Let's do that for now.
We did it.
We did it for this, for today.
For
and then
today.
We'll see how it evolves.
Yeah.
In 3 years, it'll be like, what was that first word we had? And now it's developed into like...
The Android phone?
You're going to see, you're alienating people.
Apple Music?
You're alienating.
Okay. Kim Kardashian.
Kim Kardashian. You know how I feel about her. I've always felt that about her. I don't give a shit that she tried to do a nice thing one time. Fuck it and fuck her family.
Okay.
So this pollution smoke, cigarette smoke,
great.
Secondhand smoke.
Yes.
This like
cancer.
Anyway, this one, but she coughs on the, at, coughs at the cop.
I'm sorry. How did she do it?
Like a child who doesn't know any better.
Yeah.
The crunchy cough. And this is pre-COVID even. And that was still rude.
That was...
Go back and look at it.
One more time.
Tongue out, basically.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
This is the kind of people we're dealing with, okay?
But the cops are basically like, we're coming in. One quick question. Are there any weapons?
Now, but the mother... The pollution.
Yeah.
It's not here
yet. We haven't done it.
The mother is scrambling, and you can tell she's doing some math in her head.
Yeah.
She's wondering who she hasn't seen in a while.
Yes. And she's also trying to buy time because she told the other kids to unchain the kids that have been chained.
Right. And it took them 2 minutes and 10 seconds to get to the door. So
yes.
They were scrambling the whole time.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind because I'm going to come back to it.
Yeah.
So they go into the house.
As sheriff's deputies move through a door into a horrifying landscape, the windows are closed. The room is swelteringly hot, magnifying the stench of excrement, decaying garbage, mounds of mothers molding food, every sofa, counter, floor covered in layers of trash, and unopened toys.
Hundreds, and I mean hundreds of unopened toys. Hundreds.
Yeah.
Hundreds. One of the daughters just starts like milling in the back. You just see her.
Yes.
And the cops are being so fake. And they're not acknowledging the filth. They're not acknowledging the chirp.
Yep. One of them is trying to keep the dad at the front of the house.
They're not saying Jordan's name. I don't know. Carol, did you get a name? I didn't get a name. Anyway.
Yeah.
So they're like, so how many kids do you have? And the mom's like, 13. They're like, whoa, you guys have been busy.
Been busy over here. Elvis Presley night or what?
Oh my, and this must be so unsettling for the parents, which I fucking love.
Yes.
No mention of the chirping. Whatever. But they finally start finding the kids.
I literally wrote, this is too awful to describe.
And they all have body cams.
Yes.
So we hear the cops, and it's very blurred out because we're protecting the identity of the other children.
Yeah.
But the cops whisper to the kids immediately, we're here to help you, okay?
Yeah.
Just tell us where the chains are. Tell us where everybody is. We are here to help you. We promise. Because, which I'm sure the kids are like, yeah, fucking right. They told us Doomsday was coming.
Exactly.
They told us you'd be here. I don't believe you for a second.
It's Waco all over again.
Right.
These kids, they're saying they're limp, they're pale, they're laying on mat. They're too weak to get up. They say their wrists are bruised, so they can see that the chains have been there. But
the chains have been off for 2 minutes and
for
10 seconds.
2 minutes, exactly.
And finally, so they're looking and they're looking. They're finding kids, but they're not finding any chains.
Yes.
And the chains are what they really need.
Yes.
To make this case what it needs to be.
So they can get the parents right now.
Finally.
Sarge, you got another room in the front right here with two kiddos in the bed. Over here.
Deputies move the parents to the living room. And when the officers walk inside the bedroom behind those boxes, they see three remaining children, including a boy shackled to his bed. Thick chains on his wrist. Another set of thick chains on his ankle. He's been this way for weeks.
They find a little boy shackled to the bed because these fuckers lost track.
Yes.
That's what happened.
And the dad was like standing in front of the door. They put box, like, they, like, it was, yes.
They hid all the chains. I'm sorry.
I know.
They hid all the chains before they opened the door. And one, they didn't notice that Jordan was missing. And two, they missed this little boy because they lost track.
Yeah.
Like, if that doesn't tell you what was going on in that house, then I can't help you.
I mean, they say that this boy, he's so sickly. He's barely alive. He's one of the ones that Wade knew would not make it to Oklahoma.
And the deputies find the rest of the chains. They dig through actual, literal garbage to find the keys.
They go into the parents' bedroom where they're digging through so much stuff that they find another baby.
Mm-hmm.
They find another baby in a crib that they didn't even see because it was buried under all of the, like, all the shit that was in the room. I know. The baby was alive.
Everyone is alive.
Yeah.
They find put handcuffs on these pieces of shit, and the mother goes,
"Oh, pieces of shit! We did it.
Yeah. I just feel like I say that a lot.
And we could do better.
And we can do better. Yeah, we will get there, dear listener. I promise you. Determined, because I don't want to like rush it.
Mm-hmm.
It'll happen.
No, it'll happen.
It'll come when it's meant to be here. They finally put the handcuffs on these pieces of shit, and the mom goes, "So the chains are why you're here?" And one of the cops is like, "That's definitely part of it." Is it the chains?
Is it
the squalor and the filth and the child abuse and the animal abuse and the fact that you are pure evil?
Yes.
Like, yeah, that's all part of that. So the kids and the animals have all been rescued.
Yeah.
They're immediately taken to a hospital. They're cleaned up and given.
But they say
children wasted by starvation with atrophied muscles, crushed by isolation and emotional abuse. Doctors and nurses give them food, clean rooms, clothes, kindness, love.
Kindness.
Like general
and
care
love.
For the first time in their lives. These kids have never been to a dentist.
Jordan,
you know?
Jordan
how
remembers,
painful that can be.
I know. Jordan remembers eating macaroni and cheese. And she says it was delicious.
Good.
And Diane Sawyer's like, and there was enough of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. You're like, not fighting for it.
You're feeling full for the first time in your life.
And it's not a tactic.
Yeah.
They're nourishing you in every way that these kids never got with love and care and kindness and it's like a unit full of Olivia Bensons.
Right, exactly.
This like seeing you and hearing you and like being taken care of for the first time in their lives.
So January 14th, 2018.
The case moves quickly.
It moves pretty quickly. That David and Louise Turpin are charged with 12 counts of torture, 7 counts of abuse of a dependent adult, 6 counts of child abuse, and 12 counts of false imprisonment.
Yeah.
And Louise's attorney is trying to get the case against her dismissed because she's suddenly been diagnosed with histrionic personality disorder, which is a kind of unstable extreme narcissism.
Yeah, fine. She was also sexually abused as a child.
Yeah.
Which they are trying to use.
Yes.
In her defense, which is ridiculous. That's like if I just started abusing Fiona and used, I was sexually assaulted as an excuse.
Right.
So please.
No.
That happened. We see a clip of her sister talking to Oprah or someone about how horrible.
Megyn Kelly.
Okay. Sorry. I didn't know. Yeah. Dang.
Pulling out the garbage belt, fam.
The worst. Like trying to police Santa. I can't.
I know.
So remember that whole thing?
Yes, of course.
So that is true, but she's also an evil abuser, and you can't use your experience with sexual assault like to defend your
After
actions.
Everything we've been through, we pulled out the garbage bell for Megyn Kelly.
I mean, because that is a one. We're not going to talk about Megyn Kelly for the rest of it. If we were doing it with the parents, we wouldn't. This would be a 3-hour episode. We don't have time. It would become the chirping of the fucking fire alarm. We just don't have time. So the judge is like, are you too done with your fucking crying? You are dangerous to the public. You are evil people. Like, are we done?
Because what happens is the kids come in and they're each offered the opportunity to speak. And they're all doing amazing. The eldest son speaks. He's getting his bachelor's degree in engineering.
Yep.
He says he learned how to ride a bike, how to advocate for himself, how to eat healthy. The parents are sobbing. This is the thing that offends me almost the most of anything.
I know.
They're so sad about it all.
And the prosecutor's like, you know, you hear a story like this and you're like, how can any sane person do this? And he says, it doesn't matter. The truth is that sometimes people are just evil. Like, sane people commit evil acts all the time.
Wade, the poor lead investigator who can barely get through a sentence without sobbing, is sane.
Sometimes there is no why. In my work, there's no reasoning. There's no logic to explain that type of behavior or why someone would actually do that. Not only to anybody, but your own offspring. I don't have a why. I really don't.
There's just evil in the world.
Yeah, that's
there
it.
Just is.
That's it. And we can't keep trying to understand it because we'll make ourselves crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So Joshua says, you know, I'm learning to stand up for myself. I'm going to thrive. Jennifer speaks. She's looking them right in the eyes. She's like, I'm taking my life back. And she says, I'm strong and I'm shooting through life like a rocket.
I know.
Yes, you are,
and
girl.
And they are.
They
you
are.
Know?
We'll get back to that. The mom's like, don't worry, I'll be okay. Fuck you.
The
like,
parents are crying, wanting the kids to know that they are going to, that the parents themselves are going to be okay. I was like, are you out of your mind?
I hope you die a fiery death last for eternity.
Totally.
And you'll never be okay. And that makes me happy.
Yeah.
So they're both sentenced to life in prison. And Jennifer is saying to Diane Sawyer, she's like, look, I never want to see them again, but they're good at manipulating. I mean, they let this go on for decades and they never got caught. And she's like worried that they're going to manipulate the system and then like track the kids down and hurt them.
They are like boogeymen to them at this point.
Right.
You know?
So now it's like, yay, the kids are out. The parents are away forever. The cops believe the kids.
They donated
hundreds of thousands of dollars.
$600,000.
Oh my God, isn't this amazing? No, everybody.
Nope.
Absolutely not.
Nope.
DA Mike Hestron is here to say, oh no, the government failed those kids. The system failed those kids. The public needs to know.
Yeah. So now we've got David Scott with the ABC investigative
unit. Have you ever seen someone walk with such purpose?
I know.
The camera crew can barely keep up with him.
I know.
He's knocking doors down. He's interrupting lunches. Let's go, Dave.
Because to be clear, the kids were supposed to be given all of these services once they were rescued, plus access to the $600,000 that was donated by strangers, not Justin Bieber.
To help them get on their feet or get things that they need.
And they have had no access to this money, and the system has failed them yet again.
So Melissa Donaldson is a whistleblower, and
yes,
she's the director of victim services. She's naming names. She's talking shit about everyone. But is it talking shit if it's true?
It's her own agency that she's blowing the whistle on. She's saying the kids don't, since they were rescued.
Did we see kids having to not have a safe place to live or stay at times? Yes. Did they have enough food at times? They did not. They had to go to churches and eat because they didn't know how to manage money, and some without housing at times.
Without housing?
At times.
And they were placed in homes that led to assaults. They were being abused in these homes. Some of them were couch surfing.
Yes.
So Jordan was released. Jordan, the one who escaped and then led
at
to the
17.
Rest, right. Was released without warning from, quote, extended foster care.
That just means that, like, you can stay in foster care until you're 21.
Right.
So for some kids like Jordan who needs it, like,
right,
it just means that she was able to be in the system until she was 21. But then it went, like, literally on her birthday, they, like, kicked her off the system, which denies her access to health care, to any money, to any stable place to live.
Like,
it's as though her parents threw her out, which is exactly what she said she thought was going to happen,
right,
if they ever told on their parents.
And
so
she,
her worst nightmare came true.
And she says to Diane Sawyer today, I don't really have a way to, like, get food right now. That's what she says. And I'm like, she just left a situation. Like, what about all the money? Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
$600,000.
So $600,000, over $600,000 was raised by the public. And it went into a trust, quote, overseen by the court and hidden from public oversight. And I'm like, I don't accept that.
No. So there's a public guardian that was appointed to oversee the money.
Vanessa Espinoza is her name.
She's a public guardian / real estate agent.
Realtor. Clips of her being like, so come on down to the open house. She cares more about bringing in a commission than she does about these kids.
Like $600,000 these kids should have access to for housing, for education, for transportation. They are reaching out to Vanessa saying, hey, we literally don't know how to cross the street safely. Will you show us how?
She was often unwilling to help them with even their most basic needs, including teaching them how to use public transportation, how to cross the street safely, or how to access their medical and dental benefits.
When I would ask her for help, she would
Just tell me. Just go Google it.
She tells them to give it a
Google it.
Yeah.
Just help them.
Just
like,
help them.
Why is the state doing, why is it this, like, they can't access their own money? Why is it being,
it's
why
so
is
funny.
It so complicated? Just help these kids.
Joshua, the oldest one, he said that he was asking for money for transportation. And I was like, oh, he wants a couple $1,000s to buy a car. No.
No.
He wants a bike.
Right.
He wants a bike. And Vanessa, what's her last name? Espinoza?
Espinoza.
Denies him.
Denies him the bike.
From the $600,000 given by the generosity of strangers that do not include Justin Bieber.
She also, of course, Justin Bieber, still nowhere to be found.
Why can't he give them some money?
I don't know. This woman also denied them medical resources, by the way. Wouldn't give them access to their own medical records. And I'm saying, like, but why?
Right,
like,
but why?
My question is, I understand there's red tape and you have to go through a process. Fine. You have to go through 15 steps to get your dental records. Okay, but why isn't someone saying, okay, here are how to go through these 15 steps. I don't understand it.
I was only in the foster care system for 2.5 years, so I'm not an expert by any means. These kids are in foster care, so I can tell you it's not that complicated. You know what I mean? Like, we knew where to take Daisy to the doctor. Like, we knew where to take Daisy to the dentist. We knew how to get her the services she needed. We were given WIC, which is a program that new low-income parents can, like, get formula for. We knew where to get the checks.
Right.
There were people to ask, and they just told us. It's not hard.
And also, everyone knows where the house these kids just left. Everyone knows that it's a very specific and extenuating circumstance.
Right.
And they're putting up even more roadblocks.
Right.
And I just can't get
Vanessa,
the why.
What's your deal?
Well, Vanessa doesn't have a job for very long. Because when ABC David who walks with a purpose, interrupting everyone's lunch. Yeah. You're not taking a bite of that tuna salad, not on my watch, buddy, until you answer some goddamn questions.
Yeah,
truly,
yeah.
He's literally like the camera crew cannot keep up with him. I love it. Hurry up, fellas. Let's go. ABC David starts sniffing around. Vanessa's fired the very next day.
Yeah.
Like, okay, go be a realtor. Like, clearly, that's all you want to do.
But tell me that you put somebody in the job who cares about these kids.
But they were put in other abusive homes. The foster parents are arrested for the abuse. Like, this went on for years.
Yeah.
David Scott from ABC chasing people through airports and lobbies.
I was like, now we're at the mall?
Yeah, we're at the mall. They're at, like, the coffee shop. He's, like, going into, like government.
He goes into a city council meeting, and the poor lady tries to leave, but there's not a door.
She talks into her own microphone. He, like, goes to the head of the assembly thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, answer questions, ABC News. Like,
we've heard credible reports of unsafe housing, of in some cases the siblings relying on food pantries and soup kitchens.
We are currently looking into this.
Well, I am not have the information you're looking for. We're still in investigation.
And in her mic, she's like, we're doing everything we can. And I'm like, girl, did you not know the mic was on while you're spewing your bullshit? ABC is suing, by the way.
Yeah.
They want more information. ABC News is like, okay, so you're lying to us too now. They're just like, how far does this go?
Exactly.
Why aren't you just helping them? Like, and no one is answering them. They either won't answer or they're defending their actions. Like, everyone did a great job, ABC News. And they're like, you're lying again.
It's just like, and then like in the end, we learn that the four youngest children who are still of age to be in the system are all in one foster home together.
Ugh.
Where the siblings tell us that they're happy. The older children are all doing
the nine older children
who all have like the world's most amazing attitudes are doing the best they can to navigate the world on their own. But there's $600,000 they should have access to.
I know.
And somebody to help them manage it.
Right. And now it's like, oh, there's no, it's like in a trust. And I'm like, are you going to now say that you spent it on certain things?
Yeah.
And now there's like hardly any money for the 13 of them to have. Like, where? I just don't understand.
Justin Bieber could cut a check.
I mean, he could. Like,
but he's not gonna.
He could just.
You know what I mean?
He could just.
Or he could have just come out from behind Diane Sawyer and said hello. Just say hi.
What if they said, if we could get the beads? And what if she was like, I'm okay.
Yeah. Well, you
maybe
know
what? She said no.
All right. Someone's a Bieber defender. I didn't realize.
Oh, my God. So it ends with Jordan reuniting with the deputy that she spoke
to
when she escaped.
Because we see what she looked like that night versus what she looked like now. And he can't believe his eyes.
And also the dispatcher is like sending a message being like, girl, you did it.
You did it.
But now it ends with them like having a little fun with Diane Sawyer.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, normally I don't allow fun.
I'm Diane Sawyer
but
after all.
But for you two, I'll make an exception and I won't ask you inappropriate questions like I did Britney Spears and Whitney Houston and any other number of people.
Yeah.
Miss Jennifer, where do you see yourself in 10 years?
10 years.
Pretty big question.
But hopefully have a house.
Nice.
Nice.
Nice car.
Ooh, okay.
And have a published book.
So Jennifer is training to be a restaurant manager. Now, I have been like all over their social media today.
Oh my God.
Jennifer and Jordan.
Are they the only ones on social media?
No. So Jennifer is training to be a restaurant manager. She wants to be a Christian pop artist. Her favorite song is Broken and Beautiful by Kelly Clarkson.
I love that.
But she also has she's a jewelry designer called Dawn's Designs, Be a Light in Someone's Darkness. I bought two necklaces today.
You did?
She has like a lot of like pride necklaces and like she's
oh my God,
like, really,
really
cool. She has one that's just like a piece of dye. I know it's dye, I'm just saying.
You really like went all around though. You really gave us all the options.
She has like crystals. It's really cool. So I bought two necklaces. She also has a book called Where Was God, which I also bought, which is her life story.
Oh, wow.
And she even says when you look at the like description of the book and she's like, yeah, it's not, maybe there are books more, quote, well-written, but like, I'm telling my story the way I know how. And you should know this is my level of education right now. She wanted it to be told in her voice and in her way, which I think is amazing. So I ordered that. Jordan, all over TikTok, all over Insta, she's doing like TikTok dances. One of their other sisters is also in there. Sometimes another sibling will come on and she'll like blur their faces if they don't want to be on. She's a writer and a motivational speaker. But if you go to braveness.store and get the t-shirt like I did, it says practice courage. You don't have to wait until you're drowning to ask for help.
Oh, Jordan.
Which I think is an amazing message.
Yes.
So there are like ways you can support them. They are out in the world. They are doing the best they can. They are just like, I think they're shining, they're bright shining lights. They're like changing the world.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Just by telling their story and by just like doing what they can. And so check it out. We'll like put the links in the show notes, I guess, of like where you can find their stuff. They're all over social media, so you can find it.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, girl, we did. What's it called?
Oh, my God. The Turpin 13, Escape from a House of Horror. It's on Hulu.
Fam, this is tough. I mean, it's worth a watch. Ooh. It's really well made, but it is really... I had to watch it over 2 days. I couldn't do it all at once.
It's really, really tough. And I'm glad that they were here to tell it.
Yes, yes,
because
me too.
Because this is not... There's another documentary on another network where it came out immediately after the arrests.
Yeah.
And they're not part of it. Yeah. And I was like,
they waited 4 years.
Yeah.
Fam, follow us on social media. It's at True Crime Obsessed Podcast on Instagram and TikTok. Join the Facebook group. It's True Crime Obsessed Podcast Discussion Group.
Yep.
We've had like a couple thousand people join in the last few months.
Ooh, fun.
And people always say hi when they're there, and we all say hi back, and it's really fun.
People are like, is this where I get a meetup in my town? Is this where I meet friends in my place?
I'm also saying I'm coming around the country over the summer to do meetups in various cities, so we'll be announcing them all in the Facebook group there. But there are other places where there's meetups happening just on their own. It's just a really fun, great place to make friends. It's really, really fun.
It's really fun.
What are we doing next?
Notorious, the Hollywood Ripper on Peacock. This is where we talk about Ashton a little bit.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
All right, well, stay tuned for the trailer for that and our funny and hilarious outtakes, I hope.
I guess. This is a really long episode.
I know.
Hope you guys are okay with a little bit of a bonus.
Somebody in the Facebook group the other day was like, thanks for the long episodes lately.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
We totally planned this one to be this long. Anything for you.
Anything for you, fam. All right, we love you.
Bye.
Los Angeles, a city full of dreamers and beautiful women.
He targeted four young women, a serial killer who would come to be known as the Hollywood Ripper.
When a serial killer comes to Hollywood,
Ashton Kutcher was the last person that spoke to her.
The night of the Grammys, he calls her a couple of times. She doesn't pick up.
They track his method.
He stalks his prey.
Late at night attack, multiple stabbings, no sexual assault.
The killer left behind no DNA evidence.
They track his motive.
He's imagining what it would be to be a part of that existence. Then the fantasy turns to rage and hate.
Then
she finds him on top of her.
They track him down.
She was able to kick him. He left his blood on her carpeting, a breadcrumb, right down the steps across the alley.
Snapped Notorious Hollywood Ripper.
I am now on like Gator Talk.
You are?
And it's about people being like, hey, welcome to Florida. And it's literally gators like hopping fences or dogs skating, scaring alligators away. Someone was like, when you try to do like a mental health walk, but you live in Florida.
Yeah.
Patrick, the alligators are, they're swamp dinosaurs. Please, please be respectful of the swamp dinosaurs. But they start hissing. And then the person.
They hiss?
The person, her boyfriend or husband or whatever, walks past it. I'm telling you, the length is twice as long as the studio.
Oh my God.
And she's like, oh, he's hissing. And the boyfriend's like, come along. He's staring at you. You're making it uncomfortable.
You're making it uncomfortable.
And she's like, okay. And they go. And the videos are her like, there's another one. There's another one.
Oh,
on her
God.
Like mental health walk. So I am now on Gator Talk.
Do you remember that time on Punk'd they pranked Taylor Swift?
Yes.
And it was so mean. And they set that
so much of that show was mean.
But the Taylor Swift one, they invited her over for like a songwriting session. And this is like young Taylor, and
she's
she was
young.
So
like,
excited
now,
to
Taylor.
Be there. And they set a boat on fire, and they made her feel like she had done it. And it's so mean.
I hated Punk'd. But when Bill Hader got Punk'd by NBC, when like Keith Morrison's really there.
Oh, yeah.
He drops in like kind of subtly. If you know to listen to it now, you'll hear it where he's like, I worked on Punk'd. I know what this is. I know that there's someone behind that door. Yes, it's Keith Morrison. And like that. But he references, he's like, there's a camera there.
Yeah.
Wait a second. He's like, I did this for a living. I know you're about to get me with Keith.
Oh, God.
Anyway.